I was thinking, I was in the car before I came in. You have to sit there until exactly 6 o'clock, because if you don't, somebody will come and give you a ticket. So I was sitting there, and this guy comes from around the corner of the restaurant, and he comes right in front of my car. He doesn't know I'm sitting in the car. And he starts smoking his cigarettes so hard and so fast. And you can tell he's on a very quick break. But I mean, sucking that thing all the way down to the bottom of his toes for all he's worth. And I thought, man, that was me. That was so me. I was a 3-pack-a-day girl. And that's a lot of cigarettes. You have to actually wake up in the morning and with your coffee or before your coffee start. It's like, go, to get them all in until you reach the evening. It's like, whoa, I smoked every one of those. You're smoking like every 10 minutes, you're smoking a cigarette, lighting one off the other. And I thought about him, and I thought, God, that was just so me, and there is no way in hell that you can stop an addiction like that by yourself. You can't. But we think we can. And I remember a woman who walked into her house one evening, into her worst nightmare. She goes into her house, turns on all the lights, goes to her bedroom, and there's a guy in the closet. Right? Worst nightmare. You cannot handle that situation alone. See, we on some level think that we are meant to handle our life by ourselves, and we make every effort to do it by ourselves until something that outrageous happens, and in that moment, you know you can't. See, we think it is the worst moment in the world when we hit that bottom, but actually it's not. It's a moment actually of awakening, because in that awakening, we remember something we forgot, and in the remembering of what we forgot, we are set free to walk forward in our life in a totally different way, and that's not alone. Because the greatest portion of our conflict in our life, the greatest, hardest part of our life, is the distance between our personality, me, and our soul. The I and the I am. The I can do it all by myself, and I should be able to do it all by myself. And the part of us that knows, what are you talking about? You can't do this all by yourself. You weren't even meant to. It's like Corrie ten Boom, that marvelous speaker, the woman who went through the concentration camp. She said, you can't do God's work without God. It's not possible. Whatever you call God, you can't do the work of life without life. It's not possible. She gets taken off. She gets carted off in her middle ages, right? She's like me, but imagine me like heavier and older looking and with sensible shoes. That's Corrie ten Boom. Because in Europe, you know, they didn't do this. This is all America with you know, the looks and the good looking, and you got to be thin and you got to do Bikram yoga. They didn't have that then. You were eating knedlach and chicken soup. And, you know, if you fit into your hand-me-down dress, it was a good day. So they take her off in her 50s, her mid-50s, and her older sister in her upper 50s, and they cart them off to Ravensbrück for hiding Jews in their attic. And she gets there, and she knows she cannot do this by herself. She knows she can't do her whole life by herself. Chances of doing the concentration camp by herself are nil. See, we still think there's a portion of our life we can do by ourselves, we should do by ourselves, we better do by ourselves. Everybody does it by themselves. Why shouldn't we? And we hold off a huge portion of our life thinking, this is mine, and if I need help, I'll ask for it. As if asking for help and doing it with assistance is optional. And that's where our trouble begins. We actually think it's optional. And the moment we think it's optional, we are hanging out there all by ourselves with our ass in the wind. And we're thinking, what the hell? This is so hard. And it is. Because we weren't meant to do it alone. She goes to Ravensbrück. They take her off the cars. And she walks up to the line. She sees the line. She sees what's about to happen. She sees that you're going to go up to the front of the line and there's going to be a guard there. And he makes every woman take off her clothes, everything, strip everything down. They look at you and they pass you on. This is Europe. This is Europe a half a century ago where everybody's delicate and genteel. It's not like now, please take my clothes off. Please let me show you my titties. You know, it's not like that. That is so not them. Everything was just so private for them. So this was the first huge horror. But here's the thing. That wasn't even the issue for her. Her issue was on a string around her neck. Was tied a tiny little cloth bag this big, and in it, around her neck backwards, hanging right here in the middle of her back, was a Bible. Her connection. This was a symbol of her connection. If she had to go, she wasn't going to go alone. It's almost like God had her back. She could probably even have said that. And if God had her back, even in the concentration camp, she'd be the first to say, there's no possible way that the God of life, that life itself, isn't more powerful than what goes on in this place when it comes to me. It's not possible. It's not possible that the light does not overcome the darkness. Not fight with the darkness, overcome the darkness. That's the line. So she knows she's got to get online. I know I need to stop smoking. There is no way I don't know that I have a problem, right? Everybody in my life knows that I have a problem. When I was a TA, a teaching assistant at the university, putting myself through graduate school, my students came in to do their final exams, and many of them did them on the harm of smoking with the pictures of the lungs. So I knew, I got the message. It was, oh, here are the lungs. Teacher, and here is a good, healthy lung. Teacher, and here is the, ew, of course, ew, and teacher. So I knew I needed to stop, but there was no possible way that I had the tools to put down something that became a way of life for me. See, when we think we have to do it alone, we're asking ourselves, our mind, to take us out of the problem it got us into. And it can't, because it got us there. It's not this mind that's going to be able to take us out of it. We need a bigger mind. We need a greater mind. And mark my words, this has nothing to do with religion. Forget if religion's coming into your mind. Oh, she used the God word. This is just not for me. Understand, when we talk about deeper and greater mind, we're talking about the Tao Te Ching. That talks about, and it calls it the treasure house within, the secret source of everything. Talk about a marketing idea to call the great within the treasure house within. I mean, they could have, in those days, called it the great melanonin mysterium, right? And I never would open the book. But the great treasure house within, I mean, who doesn't want to get to the treasure house within? That is pure advertising as far as I'm concerned. The treasure house, I want a treasure. And then it says within, within, and it rhymes, which is always good, which is how you knew zippity-doo-dah before this talk opened. It rhymes and it says within, within, this is where the world's treasure has always been. And it's light and it's wonderful and we go inside and yet we don't go inside to access that mind greater than our own, that is our own, that can only be accessed by our own mind until we are groveling on the ground as I did in front of perfect strangers, having broken a cigarette the night before and then tossing it cavalierly, like, oh God, this is broken, I'm not going to smoke that. Well, the next morning when there was nothing to smoke, right? And there was no Korean deli, like, down the street. You're in the middle of nowhere. I was on retreat. Worst idea. On retreat with all these, you know, good people. And I am on my hands and knees on this horrid shag carpet that had probably never been clean, underneath the couch, really never been clean, searching for that broken cigarette that I knew was here somewhere. If only I could get a piece of tape to tape it back up and then smoke it. My morning was there. And I remember being on my hands and knees thinking, this is pathetic, August. I cannot believe you are in this position. Okay, keep looking for the cigarette. Right? Because you're in this place and you think, how low can you go? How low can you go is how low you have to go. That's how low you're going to go. And if there's any lower to go, you'll be there. And I did not stop until I found that cigarette. And I was the guy in front of my car smoking that thing for all it was worth. Because I understand now what a fabulous place, hiding place, that was for me. The name of Corrie Ten Boom's book that sold millions of copies is The Hiding Place. This whole life is about the game of hiding. Let's not pretend it's not. We are hiding from ourselves, our own greatness, our own access to our greatness, and living on the smallest part of our nature, thinking, this is how you do it. This is how it's done. She's walking up. She knows she's going to have to take off all her clothes, and the Bible's there. She doesn't care about anything but the fact that she cannot go through this experience without her connection. The Tao calls it hold fast to the Tao. That's the whole point of what we are asked to do. If what we talked about last week is true, that we only have one problem, then there is one answer to that problem. If the problem is separation, then the answer is unification. To unify, to come back to ourselves. So last week when we talked about thy will be done, please understand this isn't a religious proposition. Thy will be done. The difference in the Bhagavad Gita, look how slim a difference it is. We think, oh, thy will be done. I'm praying to something outside of me. Hey, I'm praying. I've never done that. I don't even want to be doing that. And who am I talking to? And who's listening? And it pushes all our buttons. Lots of charge. But the difference in the Bhagavad Gita between ourself, our small self, me on my hands and knees, trapped, stuck in a pattern I can't get out of, and me watching myself on my hands and knees in a pattern that I seem not to be able to get out of. And both are true. And both are myself. But look at the elegance of how small a shift in consciousness is required. A shift in thinking is required to get from one self to the other, from the I to I am. We think, well, I'm going to have to be a holy person. I'm going to have to finish all the books I started. I'm going to have to not say F you all the time. I'm going to have to just be a totally different person to get there. The difference in the Bhagavad Gita between the I and the I am is the I, they spell with a small s. And the I am, a capital S. It's still you. It's all you. It's never not been you. The thing we're talking to, the thing we're after, the thing we need, the thing that's going to help us, the thing we call out to help us is that greater version of you. And I'm not talking about the Anthony Robbins greater version or you with 40 pounds off and tight abs and not that you. I'm talking about the you that existed before time, the forever you. Immortality is not a theory, I'm telling you. We have got to put that word up on the blackboard in our home and start really getting into what that word means. That we are forever means something so huge in our life. It means we can tap that place inside of us. We can tap it. We can access it. We can use it. We can find the right next step, the right word, the right next thing. It's our divine compass. It's who we are. So when Einstein said, this mind that got you here is not the mind that can get you out of here, he wasn't telling you to go find somebody else's mind. He was saying, go deeper into your own, and you will bump into a deep mind that's yours. Here's where the problem comes in. We have a teacher named Joel Goldsmith, and he says, yes, you have this deeper mind, and let's call him God. And he says, and there is a power greater than yourself. Let it use you. Ernest Holmes says, there is a power greater than you, a power and a presence greater than you, not outside of you, greater than you know yourself to be, more unlimited, more boundless. If you're the wave in the ocean, it's the ocean. And he said, you can use it. So look at the difference. You can use it versus let it use you. So his rooms are kind of empty, right? Because everybody's thinking, I don't want it to use me. I want to be over here with Ernest Holmes. I want to use that power. So he gets very famous and powerful, Ernest Holmes, based on the idea that we can use and access that power at any time. And that it's not different from us. It's not separate from us. It's not other than us. It's right here where we are. We don't have to become it. We are it. We don't have to become anything that we aren't already. We have to tap it. And we don't tap it because we think, I should be able to figure this shit out by myself. I mean, everybody around me's got their act together. What is my problem? Why can't I get a guy? Right? What's up with that? Lord, just move on. I just want to get that guy and just move on to the next problem I have to solve. Over here, Joel Goldsmith is saying something, and you know what? They seem diametrically opposed, but they're not. There's a power and a presence, that greatness, that is you. You are the wave in the ocean of that consciousness. You are made of it. You are filled with the properties of it. You come from it. You swim in it. You live in it. You think it. It's you. And he's saying, you don't even have to work so hard to access it, to use it. Let the ocean carry you. He's not saying anything really different because both and are true. We let this ocean of mind move us, and at the same time, we access it over here, understanding in those moments, I'm not just the wave. Why do I keep acting as if I'm just a wave? Why do I have to keep acting as if I'm just a wave when I have the entirety of the ocean beneath me? The entirety of the ocean of mind, of consciousness, of history, of life. Carl Jung called it the collective unconscious. We can access all wisdom at all times, right in the moment, right where we are. So why don't we? Yolanda. So I admire you for even answering. I was just kind of...
Oh, sorry.
No, good for you. Good for you. We don't trust what?
We don't trust that.
We don't trust what that?
That bigger self.
We don't trust that bigger self because?
Because we think we can do it.
Because we think we can do it. And we think we should do it and have to do it and better do it. Isn't that an interesting thing? The answer is right here. We started this series, A Way of Life That Works, so you better believe I thought a lot about week one, right? You can't just pick week one and just pick a nice topic. You have to pick the topic upon which all things are founded, ergo the wisdom I possess and the $10 fee you paid, right? That explains the $10. So You have to figure out what is at the bottom of it. What the bottom of it is we have a problem, and the problem is we try to do it by ourselves. Number two has got to be week two. Well, what's the answer? I'm not going to make you wait for 12 weeks to get the answer to what the one problem is. As a marketing idea, it's a very good idea, right? Because if I give you the answer today, it's possible I'm alone next week. Me and I'm laughing at Carol's jokes, you know. Oh, babe, that was so good. Do it again. We got tons of time. Right? So here we are in a dilemma. Corey is standing there knowing what's coming, but she knows something I didn't know. She knows something the woman in her bedroom didn't in that moment know. She knows she doesn't have to do it alone. In fact, she knows she can't. Oh, my God, tell me the entirety of the program, of the 12-step program, is not based on you can't do this alone. Because when that program was developed in 1936, it wasn't developed for people who, like, you know, got a little tipsy and, you know, pulled their skirt over their head with their second martini. These were guys who were in the gutter or in an institution or in jail, or their corpses were on the way to the graveyard. These were hard, hard drinking men who drank as I smoked, constantly from morning till night. And what they had to recognize, and here's the beauty of it, what they had to recognize was, I can't do this myself. And it's not a humiliating statement. It's a humbling statement. And it's a freeing statement to recognize we're not meant to do it alone. And that program thrives because your first stop in that program is, I can't. I can't. I can't. And you've tried it. Anybody who's an addict in this room knows that you've tried every which way. You've tried to figure it out. So Corey decides, she puts out her prayer. We're not talking about special prayers. Please hear this. This hold fast to the Tao doesn't say you have to pray a certain way or do a certain thing. It says, hold fast to that which you know is greater and deeper than you, that is you. The ocean is not separate from the wave. The wave is never separate from the ocean. There is no wave without the ocean. Hold fast to the greatest knowledge you have about what you are, the I am, what you are, capital S. That's the only difference. You're not looking outside yourself, you're looking inside yourself, deeper. And you're hooking on to the idea of the capital S, still you. And she puts out her prayer, man, make something happen here. Because this is not good, what's happening right here. It's the whole thing's not good, but this moment's not good. And I can't go where I'm going without holding fast to you. And all of a sudden, a guard goes by her and her sister, Betsy. And she sees Betsy, who's more sickly than she is. She's a very strong woman. Her sister is older and a little bit sicklier, and she's turning white, her sister. So she turns to the guard and said, my sister is very ill. Can we just go to the lavatory? And he says, yeah, you can. There's a drain pipe. Go over where the drain pipes are. That's the lavatory. Okay? So they go into that room. And in that room, all the spigot heads, we know what all that is. And there in the corner, covered with lice and cockroaches, is a little bit of furniture with old, ratty prison, I can't even call them dresses, because I'm sure by that point they were just so threadbare they were not even dresses, they were tissues, were all thrown in this area. Whoever had just, the guards had thrown some things in there. She gets an idea and she says, oh my God, this, she said, was not cockroach-infested furniture. This was like the furniture of heaven, because it was furniture. She could take her Bible, she could put it somewhere, she'd take takes it off, she puts the Bible, sticks it in that horrible little place, and she walks out with her sister back online, and they go through the first inspection. And it's a miracle. She gets herself back into the bathroom where they're all headed. They all have to go. She takes her Bible out, and now she's got to walk through another set of guards. So they give her the prison little sheath. She puts the Bible back on, hides it underneath, but it is so obvious something is there, there's no question. And she walks by and she asks this question, to thy will, right? We're just going to use that. Let's get out of the idea that thy will is anything other than the ocean in which we are born, from which we came, in which we live and move and have our being. That's as religious as you have to make it. You don't have to make it religious because it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with who we are and what we are. That's all. I think sometimes we throw out the baby with the bathwater thinking it's religious, so the whole thing goes out the window when we forget. Religion came after the fact. Who we are preceded religion. From the day we were here, we are who we are. Religion just is a way of trying to encode it and categorize it and explain it. And sometimes it's explained well, and sometimes it's not explained well. Sometimes it moves you closer to that treasure house, and sometimes further away. She's almost to the point of seeing this second guard, and there's no getting out of it now. She's already gone to the ladies' room. Ladies' room. So she asks for the prayer, Lord, put an angel in front of me And then she realizes that angels are transparent. And she says, and make him untransparent. Right? That's her prayer. You gotta love it. Give me an untransparent angel. You think your prayers are bad or weird when you're in need, right? This is to show you there are no prayers that are bad or weird. There is simply holding fast to something, to the mind greater and deeper than the one you have with your own eyes that says, oh my God, we're screwed. Because that's all we can see. The woman who walks into her apartment, me on the floor on my hands and knees, we're screwed. Anybody who looks at that situation would tell you the same thing. Of course they would. Of course they would. There's only one way to look at a situation in which you're trapped, and that is you're trapped. And as the wave, you are. As the wave, we're always going to be in situations that we're trapped in. But here is the glory of what I am telling you. It is not the end of the story. When we are trapped, we begin to look deeper because we have no choice. And in looking deeper, an amazing thing happens. We find that deeper within than we ordinarily look, because why should we look? We're so busy trying to figure shit out. We're not looking deeper. When we look within, because we have no choice anymore, we're trapped, our back is against the wall, we're on our knees, we can't go any further, we will look deeper. And when we look deeper, we're going to see something we never saw before. I promise you, you're going to see something you never saw before, because you're looking with deeper eyes than you ordinarily use. You're not using the eyes of the little self, small s, you're using the eyes of the greater self, greater self. What's the difference between the two selves? One thinks it's a wave, and one knows it's a wave in the ocean, and it is the ocean. That's the difference. Can you imagine the feeling of thinking you are just a wave? And how limited that thought is, because you're watching all the waves crashing and thinking, I'm next in line. And look, after they crash and this horrible thing happens, you hit the shore and then you disappear. It's like, what the hell? What kind of life is this? It lasts like, 8 seconds. It's a horrible thing. It's one bad piece of news after another. Those of us who've lived by the ocean, when you watch it and you think, that's what I think I am. But that is not what you are. You are that which holds the waves. You are that which fills the waves, and you are the wave. You are all of these things. And when you know you are the wave that is the ocean, that's you, capital S. That's all it is. That's you, capital S. It's still you. All that dread and weirdness we have about thy will be done, turning it over and letting go, all that stuff that keeps us from holding fast to the Tao, keeps us locked into the place where we think, I am the wave, that's all I am, that's all I'm ever going to be. That's it, end of story. And we see the end, and the end doesn't look good. The end of my story was emphysema. I knew the end of my story. My doctor told me the end of my story. And he told me what emphysema looks like. In the morning, I have my, you know, when you're a smoker and you have your coffee, and I had a beautiful red lacquer lighter and, you know, a leather thing to put all over it. And, you know, in all of my writing, everybody smoked. All the characters I ever wrote about, they were all smokers, because what is sexier than smoking? Maybe not from the inside of your body, but from the outside. So hot. Europeans, oh my God, they make smoking so hot. I could not let go of that morning ritual, because that morning ritual was my thing. As somebody with emphysema, my doctor told me and showed me a brochure about, I would be getting up, I'd have to forego the red lacquer thing and the leather stuff and the beauty and the sitting and smoking and thinking I'm so hot, and I'd have to be down on my hands and knees every morning the rest of my life, because my first stop would be out of bed, on my hands and knees, hocking up the phlegm balls, right? Want to kiss me now? Hocking up the phlegm balls, right? Who did, you know? Come on, baby, give me some tongue. You know, you're hocking up your the insides of your chest from all of the smoking I had done, and I still couldn't stop. I was still a wave with no contact to the ocean and no way to get myself out of this situation, thinking that I was a wave that was going to come to this bad end, because that's what happens to waves. That's the small self. This woman goes to her closet. She sees this guy in her closet, right? And our first thought, as a wave, is it's over. Bam, done. That's your eyes. That's your sense perception. That's the little self. And you don't even have to take the situation to as far as I'm taking it. I'm saying we all have situations we have to deal with. Parent stuff, children stuff, friends stuff, family stuff, economic stuff, debt stuff, landlord stuff, all kinds of stuff. Everybody gets their deal. That's the classroom. That is earth. That's the classroom. That is earth. Okay? So she's at the closet, and you know what? Her mind already sees the end of this story, and it's a terrible end to the story. It doesn't end well for her. It may end great for him, but it doesn't end well for her. And something happens when we know, which is why you're sitting in this room. You're sitting in this room to remind yourself, maybe not in this moment because you don't need it in this moment, but there comes times in our life when we look at different areas of our life, shine a spotlight where we need to know we're the ocean, when we need to know who we are, when we need to know who I am. There's a story about the great Kabbalists. They used to tell this story. They said it was whispered that there was a word of power. And everybody, of course, wanted a word of power. It's like, ooh, who wouldn't pay to know the word of power, the powerful word, whatever that was, because you'd have power if you had that word. And oh, boy, life would be different. And people went scouring the earth looking for the word of power until they discovered what the word of power was. It'd been something they'd been saying their whole lives without even understanding what they were saying, holding it that lightly. And the word of power is, they discovered, I am. I am in the fullness of what that means. I am in the fullness of what that means. When we know who we are, an amazing thing happens. When we hold fast to that, like Corrie ten Boom held to her Bible. You don't have to believe what she believes, but she held to something greater and deeper. She held to the I am that dwelled within and around her, greater than her. The power and presence, as Ernest Holmes calls it, the power and presence greater and deeper that is there to be utilized. If you're a wave, why don't you use the power of the ocean within you to do some work with you and for you, which is why the Tao Te Ching will say that surrender leads to perfection. It opens the doors. It makes it, says, the crooked places straight. It makes the hard edges soft. It does the work for you, through you. So when it says the sage, meaning the man who embodies the teachings in whatever religion or belief system or philosophy, the man who embodies the teachings, meaning, and what was Jesus but a man who embodied the teachings? He knew who he was. It's not me, he said. It's not me. He says, the Father within me. What was he saying? It's the Tao. It's the presence. It's the power. It's the ocean within me that does this work. It's not me. I can't do these miracles, but this power, the mighty ocean, what he called my mighty Father, he can. That's what we're saying. We're saying that there is an ocean of mind, of consciousness, of wisdom, of energy, of flow, a current of power that moves through you. Use it. Use it. She stood in front of him. She recognized that her mind, the mind of herself, her little self, did not have what it takes. And she stood there and went one breath deeper. She remembered, I am the ocean. She held fast as Corrie ten Boom did and said, give me an angel to be around me that's untransparent. That's how little it matters what you say and how much it matters where you stand in knowing who you are. Because when you know you have the mighty ocean, if you've ever lived by the ocean, it is so loud, it is so outrageous, it is so insane. Mighty swimmers, mighty surfers come up dry. They can't beat this thing. It's so big. It's so awesome. It's so powerful. And we have all the access to it that we ever want to embody. Right? So here's the thing. If we come with a cup to this ocean and say, I want a little of this power, we are going to get a little of this power. That's all we're going to get, that little. If we come to this ocean and open ourselves up, knowing that this is what I am and I have my inheritance, Not because I'm a good girl and I don't curse and I give to charity and I'm nice to older people. Not that. Have you noticed that when you get older, like older is older than you? Older, my age, I didn't even think I was going to live as long as I am now. It's amazing. But now older is like, you know, 128 because I keep moving up. God, right? If we go to this ocean and we want to embody this much, a cupful, a spoonful, a bucketful, a barrelful, our hands full, we can have as much as we want to receive. And when we are face to face with a situation we can't heal by ourselves, a man in a closet, a guard in front of us about to take away our most prized possession, me looking at charts saying you are en route to having one of those things put in your throat, like one of my friends did. She walked around with her oxygen tank wherever we went. She was already there. In those moments, we turn to the Anish Kap self, the self that's us, but with a capital. It's the wave that remembers it's an ocean. That's what we're talking about. Please understand that, because we're talking about last week's talk, thy will be done. That's what you're calling forth. You are calling forth the energy in you that knows, and it knows that it knows who it is. That's what you're calling forth. Do not fear using those words, thy will be done, or letting go, and letting go into something greater than you, because it's you, it's all you, it's us, it's what we are. We are made of it. It is what we are. In unity, he used to say, Eric Butterworth, the great Eric Butterworth, used to say, God is I am. Make it your mantra. God is I am. God is I am. So you recognize one day that you're talking about the same thing. She's looking at the guy in the closet, and she takes 1 second, a fraction of a second. That's why we're sitting in these rooms, so that in the moments of our life when we need to remember with the ocean, bam, it's there. We don't have to work at remembering. Bam, it's there. You've been reading, you've been studying, you've been writing, you've been thinking, you've been talking, you've been on whatever path you're on, remembering the bigness of you, so that when the bigness is needed, you are not shy about calling it forth. She's standing in front of the closet, and in that moment, she goes from a little S to a big S, right? The world doesn't change. God doesn't change. Life doesn't change. She changed. And what changes? She remembered. That's all that changes. She remembered, and in that moment, bam, she dropped down and she had access to a mind greater than her own. The same access, we are told over and over, that we all have, and we can have as much of it as we want, as often as we want. It's not like eating ice cream, where if you have more than your share, you become a larger double-digit girl. You know, it's not like for every time I'm going to come with a bucket to the Haagen-Dazs store, I will not pay the price. We will pay that price. But every time we go to the ocean, we don't pay the price. We embody a greatness that is who we are, a power, a courage. That's why they say, you know what the enemy on your path is? The enemy is thinking you have to become something that you're not, or something more than you are. You're not becoming anything. We're not becoming anything. That's the truth about the teaching. We're not becoming anything. We already are. We're remembering. She remembered for that moment. She was a capital S, and she said this: for the next 90 minutes, I spoke to this man. Can you even imagine? I'm not sure I can even imagine. She spoke to him from a place that saw him and was not afraid. The mighty ocean, it's not afraid. The little wave is scared shitless every single day of its life. Are we not? A bill comes in, it's a little high. Ah, shit. This comes, somebody says something and they put us in a bad light, and maybe our reputation. Ah, shit. Or our parents, they're not as proud of us as they should be. Ah, shit. For the wave, every day is a catastrophe. Every day is an emergency. Every single day, we got to bob and weave and figure out how to handle all the situations. We're the mighty wave, man. It looks at those things. It looks at our bills. It looks at our life as a whole, and it knows who we are. The wave doesn't see itself as it really is. It compares itself to every other damn wave around it, and it comes up short, doesn't it? The ocean compares itself to nothing because nothing compares to the ocean. She stood and talked to this man for 90 minutes because she saw him as a broken wave in the ocean, not consciously, but from that place of knowing the next right step, the next right word. And we say, yeah, that's her, that's not me. Because if you had met this woman, you would know she would be as scared as you would be, as I would be, as any of us would be, walking into her house into a situation that was like a true 911. But she accessed that place. She didn't hesitate to, and here's the difference. In emergencies, in crises, in situations where our back is up against the wall, in places where we are stuck, we're just ground down to our knees, the good news is that we don't hesitate to go deeper because we have no choice. And when we go deeper, we see something we never saw before. So when Corey asked for those angels, the untransparent angel, to come around her, she said, the guard, there's me, there's my sister, and there's the woman behind me. And the guard manhandles my sister and pushes her through. And then he manhandles the woman behind her and pushes her through, feeling their bodies, feeling if anything is hidden underneath. He does that to the woman in front, her sister, to the woman in back, and totally, as if by some kooky miracle, doesn't even see her. Untransparent angel. Remember that prayer. Right? And it's not the prayer. It is us knowing that when we hold fast, if we have one problem and it's separation, the answer to the one problem is non-separation, is unification. And the best prayers are the ones that don't start with what I need and what I want, because we're going to start that prayer as a wave, asking for everything we need and want and think we don't have as a wave. And as a wave, we really don't have pretty much anything going for us. Right? We're insecure, we're nervous, we're anxious, we're self-conscious. I almost tripped. Did somebody see me? That's the stuff we're thinking of as a wave, as a mighty ocean. We're thinking about what our destiny is, about who we can serve, about who we are, about how we can help, what we can give. See, the little S, the wave is always thinking about what it can get that it doesn't have, and the great self that we are already is thinking about what it is, and what it is, and what it has, and knows that it has, is always in a position to give. Because what do you do when you have? You give by default, not to be a nice person so that your neighbor can say, what a nice person my neighbor is. You're giving because you can't help but give it away. We have one problem, and there's one solution. We have got to come to terms with making it our business that there's nothing more important in our lives, not your nails in your manicure or your pedicure or your hair, or the zit or the guy or the money or the travel or the home or the roaches. There's one thing that is important upon which everything else in your life rests, I promise you. This is a way of life that works, which means the foundation upon which we're going to build our new house has got to be on rock. And what is the rock? Our knowing who we are. You don't have to explain it to anybody. It's not any kind of religion or special philosophy. You have to get into it. Who are you, the wave or the ocean? If you think you're the wave, it's time to get involved with a process of thinking that helps you remember who you are. And we've done it for a number of months before some of you have come, and I'm going to ask you to start it again tonight. If you only have one prayer or affirmation or statement of truth or whatever you want to call it for the next 90 days, then this is one exercise you're going to have throughout for the next 90 days, and it will serve you so well. For some of you, you've already been doing it. You go out of your house in the morning before you leave your house, and you say these words to whatever, that which is greater and deeper, in which you live and move and have your being, show me your face. You ask that question. For your money, there is not a more fascinating, surprising, outrageous exercise for you to do that's going to show you how much of an ocean you contain. And each and every day, you want to contain more of that ocean. You want to open to more of that ocean. You want to absorb more of that ocean. You want to remember more of that ocean. You can. Because Corey ended up in the camps with her Bible, and they called her barracks. They had a special name for her barracks. Her barracks, as lice-infested as it was, as all of them were called the crazy place. That's what they called her barracks, the crazy place. Literally, the crazy place. Why? Because they said there in those barracks, they have hope. That woman walked away unscathed from the man in her house. And they embraced when he left the following morning. And when I finally got it through my thick skull that there was no way that a wave could stop an addiction like the one that I had had for 17 years, I stepped into the ocean and asked it to do what I couldn't do, because we can't do it without the fullness of who we are. And I have been cigarette free. I'm 29, so it's been 26 years. And 26 years where I don't even think about it. So consider this proposition. Listen to this tape. Listen to last week's talk and put yourself together with you have one problem and there's one solution. And we'll take it a step further next week. But I am telling you, this is a way of life that works because it is built upon a rock, a foundation of who you are now. Not who you're going to be at the end of the 12 weeks, who you are now, taking out of hiding the greatness that already exists within you, starting to tap into it. What are we waiting for? Enough said. Thank you.